Hey, where are you going, Jim? The elevator's over here.
Taking the stairs.
But our meeting's up on 8.
Yeah, I know.
But that's 8 floors up. That's like 8 times... 8, I don't... A lot of stairs.
That's the point. I've already lost a few pounds and earned almost $100 in wellness incentives.
Whoa, you're getting rewarded for working out?
Yeah, I know. I'm just as surprised as you are, Bob.
Fearless is full of surprises. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits and sign up at fepblue.org/chooseblue by December 11th.
You are Locked On Eagles, your daily podcast on the Philadelphia Eagles. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Breaking Football. And you can find me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. Now, normally, I would be with my co-host Benjamin Solak from Bleeding Green Nation and Pro Football Spot. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. However, Benjamin is on the road right now coming back home. He's at the University of Pittsburgh today, and he was trying to run around and steal their Wi-Fi and get a good connection, and just it wasn't able to work. Here I am solo today. Ben will be back for sure tomorrow, and we're going to talk about some of the things that I want to hit on today. But first, and possibly the only thing, depending on how long I prattle on about my love for offensive line play, that I wanted to talk about with you today is the Eagles' offensive line situation heading into the 2017 season and possibly beyond. Left tackle is set with Jason Peters, as you know. Right tackle is set for now with Lane Johnson, but right now I want to dig into that a little bit more because the future of this offensive line, I mean, it's really tied to Lane Johnson. Last year, as you know, Lane was suspended for 10 games for taking a banned substance that he swears was some pre-approved amino. Regardless of the situation and what you think about it, with Lane Johnson, the Eagles went 5-1. Without Lane Johnson, we went 2-8 and scored 7.5 less points per game while playing 5 different right tackles in his absence. That's not sustainable. Obviously, these things don't happen in direct result of one factor, as there are many, but those are some pretty eye-popping differences. The question is, do you trust Lane Johnson as our current right tackle and our left tackle of the future, and how bad does it sting if he lands in hot water again, which would likely mean his departure based on the way his contract is structured? And look, I am of the camp that offensive tackle is a need for this team, and I thought it was a need coming into this offseason. And I think I tweeted out before the draft, don't be shocked if the Eagles went offensive tackle first round, considering Jason Peters nearing retirement, Lane Johnson hanging precariously off the edge of a cliff, and depending on how the team feels about Big V, they might have made a move for offensive tackle. I know it's always been a very important position for Andy Reid when he was drafting, and I've got to assume the same philosophy is going to be carried by Doug Peterson being a disciple of his. It was a long shot, but I was hoping for my offensive tackle number one in that draft class last year, Cam Robinson from Alabama, who went very early in the second round to Jacksonville and is having a solid camp and preseason playing left tackle for them after Brandon Albert's retirement. Robinson was a polarizing prospect, and I don't expect everyone to agree with me on him. He had some minor technical flaws, but I felt his flaws were very coachable, and I felt the skill set that he possesses was special. I had him in my top 10 for the overall draft board. Now, even if Cam doesn't make it as a left tackle, I'm really comfortable with him as a right tackle, and that at least would have given us an insurance policy at the position. Additionally, I will note it's not a bad need to have coming into next year. That's something I want to talk with Ben about tomorrow. Because if that's the case, this offensive tackle class for next year's draft class looks to be solid, where this year's was pretty much universally panned as inadequate as a whole. But it is still a long way out, so I'll cool the Jets on that. Now, just as an aside, I want to ask you guys on Twitter, feel free to use the hashtag LockedOnEagles. If you've peaked at the 2018 tackle class, who do you like? And also, if we did pick an offensive tackle in the last draft, who would have you liked? And in what round? What do you feel would be the would have been the best fit and the value? And we'll talk about more of that tomorrow. We'll work right on down the line and move to right guard, where we have Brandon Brooks as our starter. I think Brooks has been an underrated component of this line since coming as a free agent from Houston last year. He's solid in the run game. He's solid in pass protection. He plays with intelligence. and we have him signed up until 2020. And this guy is only 27, and I think we got a good one. I know he missed a few games last year due to some anxiety issues. I felt he dealt with that very professionally. I feel that he has a fantastic story to go along with that, and I hope that he is fully moved on from those issues and it won't cost him any more games. I wish him the best, of course. Center is where it gets really interesting for me. I want to travel back in time to March for a moment. This is when it was heavily rumored that the Eagles were going to possibly trade center Jason Kelce for Saints running back Mark Ingram. Now, Kelce struggled at the beginning of last year with penalties and some errant shotgun snaps, and it looks like the Eagles could start Isaac Samalu or Stefan Wisniewski there this year and be all right. Now, Kelce did get it together for the back half of the season, but I'm just going to say it, man. I am not a Jason Kelce believer right now. He made far too many costly mistakes throughout the season last year. He's undersized, and he's possibly declining. Now, Mark Ingram, on the other hand, is coming off his first 1,000-yard rushing season. He averages 4.4 yards per carry for his career. He was at 5.1 yards per carry last season. He has a combined 96 catches over the last 2 years, which fits what we want to do offensively with our running backs in the passing game. And one last factor, Mark Ingram's contract is $1 million less than Kelce's, and he's 2 years younger. If we played a little deal or no deal, and I want to ask you, and I want to ask Ben this question tomorrow as well, if the Saints offered Mark Ingram for Jason Kelce straight up right now, would you take it? All right, so we're going to move on to left guard. Barring any last-minute trade that shakes the apple cart, this is Isaac Samalu's spot, right? He's been a physical presence inside the interior of that line. He's a violent player, which nothing gets me more excited than offensive linemen that want to finish a play in the nastiest way possible. I think we've got a good one and a young one, and I think he's going to be a piece of that line for a long time to come. So I'm glad we were able to get him at great value in the draft, and he really is showing up for me right now. Now, again, left tackle Jason Peters, the ageless wonder, the beating heart of this offensive line. I mean, you pray he makes it through 16 games and gets a proper send-off if this is his last year. I mean, this guy is going to be turning 36 in January, but he also seems like the kind of Spartan warrior that is going to come back with his shield or on it, right? And when you take a look at the overall picture, I mean, that tackle position going into this year, if everything stays the same, I mean, it's my belief that you can make an argument that Jason Peters and Lane Johnson are two of the top five offensive tackles in this league. I mean, the NFC East has some fantastic tackle play that's going to go down this year. It's going to be really hard to rush on those teams on passing downs. Now, I wanted to mention an opportunity for you. Locked On Eagles has some inventory for sponsorships for the upcoming Eagles season. This is a great and affordable way to connect with Eagles fans like you. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to connect with sponsors than other media forms, so email me directly at lockedoneagles@mail.com. That's lockedoneagles@mail.com. Our rates are reasonable, and based on the volume of listens, you can have your business right here on Locked On Eagles.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.
All right, so that's going to do it for today on the offensive line talk. Before we go, let's talk CB1, right? Let's talk Ronald Darby, and also let's talk Jordan Matthews, because Jordan Matthews' breaking news yesterday was he chipped his sternum, and he is listed as week-to-week, so the Bills already getting the raw end of the stick on this deal. Obviously, it's not a serious injury. We hope for a full recovery for Jordan Matthews. I wouldn't wish ill on him at all, but the Bills fans have got to be scratching their head a little bit on it. I know I was listening to Locked On Bills with my buddies Eric Turner and Nate Geary. Follow them and listen to their podcast if you want to keep track of this Jordan Matthews saga to see how their opinion goes from, yeah, I like it, to, I don't know, as the season goes on. So that'll be an interesting follow. Give them a listen. Now back to Ronald Darby, and let's talk about getting my man a new number, right? because I don't know if you've seen, but the number 35 just isn't going to cut it for me. And apparently for him either, because word is he wants number 28, which is currently owned by Wendell Smallwood. Now, this is kind of a joke, and it's a hypothetical that, you know, would never happen. And I put this on my Twitter feed and got a couple of responses from people that took it a little too seriously, like, this is dumb. But here's my question. My question to you is, should we cut Wendell Smallwood right now so that Ronald Darby can get number 28? Take the option of paying for it out of the equation. Would you rather have Wendell Smallwood, or would you rather have Ronald Darby running around with a number 35 for the rest of this season if you had a choice? If you had a choice. So vote on that on my timeline at Michael J. Kist. Call me a dummy because you're taking it too seriously. But let me know what you think about that. The last thing I wanted to touch on today was our friend Elliot Shore Parks strikes again and makes some really questionable analysis on this whole Jordan Matthews trade. So one of the things that he said on Twitter, just to kick it off before we even get into his article, he posted an image on Twitter, and it says, catches that week one wide receivers in 2016 had in the previous season. This is for 2015, Jordan Matthews, 85. And he goes into catches that the projected week one receivers in 2017 had in the previous season. That's 2016, Alshon Jeffrey, 52. Look, this is extremely misleading. Alshon Jeffrey served a four-game suspension, and look, the catches aren't the same. They just aren't. Alshon Jeffrey averages over 4 yards more than Jordan Matthews has per catch. They aren't the same wide receiver. They don't play the same position. Jordan Matthews plays a lot in the slot. He's a high-volume slot guy. He's not the most explosive, and that's why the Eagles moved him. They want to see if Aguilar can get his play speed up and play to that timed 4-4-3 speed and stretch the field from the slot. They are different types of wide receivers. Now, in his article, this is the one that got me the most. Let's just quote the article here. Quote, in the best year of Jeffrey's 5-year career, he was not the top target on his team. In 2013, when Jeffrey finished with 89 catches for 1,421 yards and 7 touchdowns, he was not the top targeted receiver on the team. That title belonged to Brandon Marshall. Okay, let's dissect that. 89 catches, 1,400 yards for Alshon Jeffrey in 2017. He's saying he's not the top target. So what was Brandon Marshall's stats? 100 catches for 1,295 yards. A 13.0 average with 12 touchdowns, which is impressive. Now you look at Alshon Jeffrey, his 89, 1,400, 7 touchdowns. His average is 16 yards per catch, which is still better than Brandon Marshall's. They are different types of receivers. You cannot do a one-for-one comparison with Alshon Jeffrey and Jordan Matthews. They don't play the same way. They don't win the same way. They just aren't the same type wide receiver. It's amazing to me when Elliot Shore Parks, who lobbied for the Eagles to give Jordan Matthews a new contract back in January, that he would even try to make this jump in logic. It blows my mind. It's not comparable. It's like saying that Cole Beasley is a more productive target than Alshon Jeffrey. That you can't match it up that way. It's not a one-for-one. Can we stop with the stupid narratives? I know it's silly season. I know it's the offseason. I know you're begging for a story. And the only reason I really said this today was so that you could understand that the article was toilet paper and you wouldn't have to click. So hopefully I saved you the trouble of the literal suffering that reading Elliot Shore Parks is. And oh, but the demented car salesman was not done from the same article. Quote, with Matthews still on the roster, there was no guarantee that Jeffrey was going to be the top target among the receivers.
Who cares?
Who cares? Continuing, especially considering the chemistry on the field that Wentz had with Matthews. At the very least, the receivers have a strong established receiver in the slot that was going to help Jeffrey. Now, with Matthews gone, opposing secondaries can completely key on Jeffrey. I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry, what this foul-thieving hamwit swine is telling me is that teams are game planning for Jordan Matthews. Teams are game planning, taking a safety, shadowing a shallow cross to take away from staying over top Jeffrey on a man two trail or something to that effect. Is that what you're telling me? You're telling me a defense is going to commit extra help to a slant or an out for a route that doesn't even get to 10 yards. They're going to shadow a safety, take him away from Jeffrey, not leverage the coverage towards him because of a volume slot target that doesn't get down the field. Is that what you're telling me? What a devious knuckle dragger Elliot Short Parks is. Blows my mind. I can't. There are very few slot receivers in the league that don't run a sub 4-4 that are seeing the type of attention that Elliot Short Parks seems to remember that defenses were giving Jordan Matthews. I would love for him to show me where there was a cone bracket on Jordan Matthews last year. It's inconceivable that this is the argument that he's making. Don't click the clickbait, please. I took the bullet on this one. I don't know if I can do it again. Usually I just work off screenshots with him because I don't want to give him his penny or whatever it is. Keep that in mind when you hear the stories about Jordan Matthews and Alshon Jeffrey and the impact of the loss and all that stuff. It's good, y'all. It's totally fine. And it's totally fine to have debate on the impact that losing Matthews would have if we don't get valuable slot production during the season. I completely understand that. On yesterday's show, we talked about how we were going to approach the slot position and how we thought it was going to be more of a slot by committee. And I think we can get the same type of production out of the slot. Hopefully more production from Zach Ertz from the tight end position, who reportedly has been catching everything in camp, and we can move on that way and not have to pay Jordan Matthews more than he's worth. So that's my two cents on it. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the cornerback position. I'm going to ask those questions about the offensive line that I was asking you today. I'm going to ask those questions to Ben. We're going to talk more about Ronald Darby because I'm excited about him. Why not? And maybe we'll even talk a little bit more about Alshon Jeffrey and how ridiculous ESP is. Until then, as always, keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
You are Locked On Eagles, your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.